Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Ineffective Assistance and Habeas Review Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On April 4th, 2016, the Supreme Court decided Woods v. Etherton without oral argument. Timothy Etherton was convicted in Michigan State Court of possession with intent to distribute cocaine, and the conviction was affirmed on direct appeal. His efforts to obtain post-conviction relief in state court, which related to his lawyer's failure to raise a Confrontation Clause objection to the admission into evidence of the anonymous tip that led to his arrest, were rejected. A federal district court also rejected Etherton's subsequent attempt to obtain federal habeas relief, but the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit reversed that judgment. Etherton's appellate counsel had been constitutionally ineffective, the Sixth Circuit concluded, and no fair-minded jurist could conclude otherwise. By a vote of 8-0, the Supreme Court reversed the judgment of the Sixth Circuit in a per curiam opinion issued without oral argument. Without reaching the Sixth Circuit's holding that counsel had been constitutionally ineffective, the Supreme Court indicated that the Sixth Circuit had failed to apply the appropriate deferential standard of review required under the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act. With that in mind, the Supreme Court explained, it would not be objectively unreasonable for a fair-minded judge to conclude that counsel's failure to raise a Confrontation Clause objection to admission of the anonymous tip was due not to incompetence, but because the facts in the tip were uncontested and, in any event, consistent with Etherton's defense. To discuss the case, we have Ronald Eisenberg, who is Deputy District Attorney for the Philadelphia District Attorney's Office. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Eisenberg.
Ho-hum. Another United States Supreme Court per curiam summary reversal of a circuit court for refusing to follow the deference requirement established by Congress in the Federal Habeas Corpus Act. This time, it was Woods versus Etherton, an April opinion overturning the Sixth Circuit. This was a routine drug case from Detroit. At the defendant's trial, a police officer testified, also quite routinely in cases of this type, that the defendant was stopped because of an anonymous tip that he was carrying cocaine. The trial judge routinely instructed the jury that the tip itself was not evidence, otherwise it would be hearsay, and that it was offered only to explain the police officer's course of conduct. The state courts routinely denied the defendant's claim that his lawyers were ineffective for failing to object to this testimony, and so did a federal district judge on habeas corpus review. Not the Sixth Circuit, though. In a 2-1 opinion by Judge McCullough, joined by Judge Donald, the Court of Appeals determined that everyone else had been wrong and threw out the defendant's drug conviction. Now, the Supreme Court has thrown out the Sixth Circuit's decision and made quick work of it. Without full briefing or oral argument, in a short, unsigned opinion, the court held that the judges below violated the habeas deference requirement. By statutory mandate, federal judges must affirm a state criminal conviction unless the state court rulings were so off the wall that no reasonable judge could have agreed with them. And when the rulings concern ineffective assistance of counsel, they are doubly hard to overturn because the lawyer is entitled to deference too. So the circuit court's job should have been easy. And yet, like so many appeals panels before them, the judges did not do their job, and the Supreme Court, almost predictably by now, stepped in. We've seen this story before, in fact, dozens of times. The Supreme Court has granted similar summary reversals on habeas review in more than 50 cases so far this century, which is still young. And in just the few weeks since Etherton was decided, the court has issued yet another summary habeas reversal in a California case. As routine as these reversals have become, though, they are, in the aggregate, quite remarkable, even shocking. Remember, this is the Supreme Court that is irreconcilably divided, almost paralyzed. Just one new justice may determine the court's direction for a generation. The battle over that vacancy could determine the next presidential election. But when it comes to the Habeas Corpus Act, the court is unusually active and unified. The court receives thousands of certiorari petitions, but denies almost all of them. The few it accepts are subjected to lengthy briefing, public argument, and months of opinion writing. Only a tiny number of the cases brought to the court result instead in per curiam summary reversals. And that number is overwhelmingly dominated by federal habeas cases. What does it all mean? What it means is that the system is broken. I should clarify, because normally when people say the system is broken, they are claiming that the state's criminal justice systems are broken, especially in regard to capital cases. The so-called proof of that claim is that many convictions are reversed on federal habeas review. But the necessary premise of this claim is that the lower federal courts are infallible, that they are correct when they decide that all the judges who ruled before them didn't know what they were doing. That seems an unlikely premise to me, but I suppose it's debatable, especially if you believe that the majority of states, including most of the largest states, are engaged in a not-so-secret conspiracy to convict and execute innocent people. What I claim, though, is that it is not the state court system that is broken, but the system of federal habeas review of state courts. And I think my proof is a lot stronger. The proof isn't simply that the Supreme Court reverses so many circuit court habeas rulings. I'm not saying the court is right because it is last. That's a tautology. Nor am I saying that the court is right because its justices are better jurists than those on the courts of appeals. That's a possibility, but hard to prove. What does qualify as proof, though, are all these summary reversals. Keep in mind that the court didn't have to take any of these cases. It has discretionary review. It didn't have to decide them summarily. It could have ordered full briefing and argument. And it didn't have to vote with one voice. Almost all of these opinions are unanimous, and the few exceptions typically carry lopsided majorities of 7 or 8. This is no small thing. It is a giant thing. The court consists of justices spanning the whole spectrum of judicial philosophy. It has the power to pronounce over the widest spectrum of issues facing our country. But there is no other area of the law in which the court has reached out to speak so harmoniously, so consistently, and for the better part of 2 decades. And yet, despite this concerted action, the problem remains. Circuit court judges keep overturning criminal convictions in the face of the limits imposed on them by federal law. As one of those judges reportedly said, they can't reverse us all. For all the efforts that the Supreme Court has made, there is still remarkably little focus on this issue. Paradoxically, that may be precisely because these are summary decisions. The summary process just doesn't get the publicity accorded to cases on the court's argument calendar. It might help if the court were more direct in its language, if it could call out more directly those lower court judges who decline to do their duty to follow the law. In the meantime, apparently, it's up to the rest of us.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.